Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking, as always, with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. And isn't it nice to have the cool weather back now that we're deep, deep into the what I'd consider the fall?
Well, yes, I hope it stays. I mean, what happens around here is we get that and then it pops back up to
in
like
Central Texas,
90.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to have those days too. And then we appreciate them even more. So
yes,
it's all good.
Yes, it is. It is all good.
But fun to be with you.
Well, as always, it is fun to be with you too. And I want to hearken back to a previous episode of not that long ago.
But okay.
Sometimes you will bring things up in an episode and I'll make a little note and say, oh, we should talk about that separately.
Did I say something wrong?
No. Not wrong. No, not wrong at all.
Oh,
it was
no.
Just, it prompted in me a thought that this would be an interesting sort of topic all on its own.
Okay.
So we were actually talking about your pending job change and your move on from Southwestern to St. David's Foundation. And you said something in that discussion that was interesting, and it had to do with not letting current success confine you to a particular lane or role or define who you are professionally, personally, and all of that. And we touched on that, but then we kind of breezed by it and kept going. And I thought, well, maybe that's something we could come back to, because you can certainly apply that in school. You know, if there's somebody who's making stellar grades and just doing a bang up job in history and they put themselves on a history track
and not explore,
they might miss out on
or
math
or
physics.
Yeah.
They might miss out on all kinds of things. So I honestly, the first time you brought that up, I didn't even really think of that as a phenomenon. But do you see that happen in academia and in other places?
I need to first of all say that you know, we do not script these things.
Right.
I think our listeners.
Oh, I think that's pretty clear.
But I will say that particular ad lib, I found that thought provoking. Like when that came out, I'm like, wow, what
an
interesting, what an interesting things. I had never thought about that before. But when I think about my own career, and I think that when we think about our own journeys through life, we see this happening from time to time. And in my case, I committed myself to be an educator, to be a teacher. And when I decided to take on a different type of leadership role in education and take on the presidency at Southwestern University, I had colleagues saying to me, well, you're going to the dark side and, you know, and you're such a great teacher. How could you stop doing that to do something else? And my comment from a few weeks back was really almost a response to that as well, which is, so just because I'm a great teacher, that means that I'm not supposed to do anything else ever again. And maybe we can be great at other things as well. And in some sense, that's where I am right now as I'm transitioning from thinking about how to make people better through education to, in my future, thinking about how to make people better through a wide variety of things, including wellness initiatives as well as education. And so when someone is successful at something, and you're right, it could be in school or just they do well in a particular subject. Oh, I'm really good at math. I hate it, but I'm good at it. I get good grades. Well, therefore, I should do it. Well, that's a silly reason to actually go and pursue it. But the question is, just because one's good at something, does that potentially dismiss the possibilities of doing something that might bring you greater joy, might be actually something you're even better at, or something that you're just actually drawn to, and otherwise you wouldn't give that a shot? I think that's a really thought-provoking idea for all of us at all ages.
When I especially think about it, it's sort of like wanting to stay in your comfort zone. And
right.
When I contemplate this topic, what I think about is, well, you know, success feels really good.
Yes.
Like
it's addictive.
It totally. If you're in school, if you're getting good grades in a subject, like that positive reinforcement is good. Now, we've talked about grades. That's a separate discussion.
Right, yeah,
but
yeah.
That feedback feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you are somebody who does well in the job that they have and people
right.
tell you, oh, you're a great fill in the blank, you know, you should keep doing that.
Right.
Like, who doesn't want to hear that?
Of course. And so there is this inertia and this kind of magnetism, that's magnetic pull to that success. And if that success is something that continues to bring an individual satisfaction and joy and a sense of accomplishment, that's great. I'm not suggesting that everyone's got to shake it up. But all I'm saying is that that should not confine us to look at other possibilities and other opportunities, because maybe your gifts and your talents can be amplified in a different direction that we wouldn't consider otherwise.
So what's a good way to get started to think about moving outside of one's area, I'll say, of success or accomplishment where somebody has done really well, but maybe they're not enjoying it so much, or maybe they just want a new experience? That, you know, you said inertia. How do you kind of break that inertia and take a step or two?
Well, I think, first of all, it's all with intentionality. If you're going to hope that you accidentally stumble upon something, I would say you have to be really lucky. That opportunity will come to you and it will happen, but it's very unusual, and I think it's more luck. You can create your own good luck with intentionality. And so intentionally assessing, you know, and a lot of vocations, there are annual reviews. I don't know what it's like here at KUT.
We have that.
Okay. So, you know, every year you have the organization within which we work assess us. Well, why not take that opportunity as a time to not just assess how you're doing, which a lot of times we have to give a, you know, kind of personal narrative on, you know, my accomplishments over the past year, but also think about what are alternatives? What are the skills that I've developed over the past year, and can I utilize them in a different context? Am I growing as much as I want to grow? Do I want to grow? Am I getting a little restless? Am I getting a little bored? Am I losing steam? And these are the kind of thought-provoking questions that if we ask on a regular basis, even if it's once a year, it might, in fact, not necessarily lead us to changing our jobs or changing our work, but it might allow us to see that current work in a different way, and then to approach it in a different way, and to use that as an opportunity for continued intellectual and personal growth within the confines of that job, but now in a more expansive perspective.
All right. So I may need a little assistance seeing the puzzler in a different way.
Ah, I told you last week this was going to be hard.
So it was actually kind of fun.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if I've landed on the right answer. As a matter of fact, I didn't. But I wanted to tell you sort of my thought process, but remind us of the puzzler first.
Yes. So let me remind all of our listeners what this ridiculous challenge was. We started off with a regular deck of playing cards. So 52 playing cards.
No jokers.
No jokers. And then some small number of cards somehow have been lost from the complete deck. So we have an incomplete deck of cards. And here's what I tell you about that incomplete deck. If I were to deal those cards out evenly to four people, I would end up with three cards left over. If I were to take that same incomplete deck and deal it amongst three people evenly, I'd have two cards left over. And if I deal that same incomplete deck amongst five people, I would still have two cards remaining. And the question is, how many cards are there in the incomplete deck? So it is kind of a mathy question, because there's a lot of numbers here, and it really is kind of an arithmetic challenge. But we'd love to hear how you thought about it.
Well, so first of all, I was a little intimidated by the mathy part, but I plunged ahead.
Good.
So what I did was I thought back to other puzzlers we've done that seemed kind of complicated at first, and I'm remembering advice you gave that has proven to be very helpful, which is that start with the simplest, easiest, most obvious possibility.
Right.
And so I thought, well, if the deck is missing a small number of cards, what's the smallest number it could be missing? That's one.
Right.
Right.
Sure. So
I said,
start there.
We've got 51 cards. So I started dividing 4 into 51. And it turns out the math works. If you divide 4 into 51 for the dealing to four people, you wind up with three cards left over. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm onto something. But then you get to three people, and actually three divides into 51 evenly. So there would be no cards left over. So one card missing is not the answer.
Right.
So then I thought, well, I'll just move up to two. So then I just kept doing the math. I didn't keep doing the math. I stopped, but I was on the right track, and I knew that eventually I would arrive at the number if I did all the math.
That is exactly right. And I count that as a complete correct solution without giving the answer. And what's really important here for our listeners is what you did to do the work, which was to realize that we're actually doing a division. Because when we talk about, for example, when we deal them out evenly to four people and three cards left over, that's a very cryptic way of saying that the number of cards, if we take that number and divide it by four, the remainder would be three. Mm-hmm. And similarly, if you take that same number and divide it by three, the remainder would be two. Take that same number and divide it by five, the remainder would be two. Now, in the branch of mathematics that I study, which is number theory, in elementary number theory, there's actually a name for this. This is actually an example of what's called the Chinese remainder theorem. The Chinese remainder theorem allows us to solve these simultaneous remainder questions at once.
Oh, now see, that was kind of fun.
And as long as the number of people that we're dealing to are kind of relatively primed to each other, so they're not numerically connected with each other, so 4, 3, 5, they have no common factors besides 1, then you can always find a solution.
Oh, cool. All right. How would you do that?
Okay. So so I'm not going to tell you how to do it that way because that's too complicated, but let's just think through it as a listener might do it. Your way is great. Yours is just a trial and error starting at 51 and keep going down and then keep checking, and that will eventually get hit upon the answer. Another way is just to think about these things. So when you divide this number by 4, you have a remainder of 3.
Yes.
So what kind of number must the number be? If I divide it by 4 and then add, so that's going to be 4 times something plus 3 is going to be my number. It's got to be
odd number.
It's got to be odd. So automatically, the first thing tells me it's got to be an odd number.
Right.
So I know it's got can't end in a 0, a 2, a 4, a 6,
right.
or 8.
So that knocks out half of them.
That knocks out a lot of numbers. Then what I did, so here's how, I'm just telling you how I figured this out, because I didn't even do it the mathy way. I was trying to do it the way that our audience listeners might do it. Then I went to the one when we divide by 5 people, and there were 2 left over. Now, we know when we divide by 5, we know that if we have something going in evenly, it's going to end in a 0
or a 5.
Right. So if we have 2 left over, it's either going to end in a 2 or a...
Wait. Oh, if we have 2 left over...
Right. So if I add,
Oh,
back...
it's going to either end in a 0 or 5.
So if I add the 2 back...
Oh, it's either going to end in a 2 or a 7.
Yes. And we know it can't be...
7. Oh, no. It has to be odd.
Right.
So it's got to be... It has to be ending in a 7.
Correct. It can't be 2, so
because
it has to be ending
in a 7.
Because
we go back to the 4 people.
So now we automatically know that the last digit has to be a 7. Now let's go to the 3. If we divide by 3... Well, now remember how it works. If you divide by 3, we get a remainder of 2. So that means that if I take the number, which ends in a 7, and I subtract 3, then it has to be divisible by 3. And so... I'm sorry, if I subtract 2, it has to be divisible by 3. And so remember, it ends in a 7. If I subtract 2, what will the number now end in?
Well, 5.
Right. So the number is going to end in a 5, and it has to be divisible by 3. So now we can just look through and say, well, there's 15, there's 25, there's 35, there's 45, there's 55. Now, 55 is too big because it has to be less than 52. So now we can go back and just say, if we look at those things, do we see if those numbers are divisible by 3? Well, 25 is not divisible by 3, and 35 is not. The only answers are 15 and 45. Now, so 15 means that we lost a lot of cards, but I said we only lost a small number. So it must be the 45. So if we take the 45 and add back the 2, then in fact, what we see is we get 47. And so 47, in fact, must in fact be the answer.
Ta-da! Which means there were five left out.
There are 5 left out, right? But the question is 47. Right. And so really complicated. But you see that it didn't take any advanced math.
Right.
It was just realizing that, first of all, the first thing about the 4 people told me it's an odd number. Then the 5 people told me it had to be 7. Then if I subtracted 2, it ends in a 5 and has to be divisible by 3, and there's only a certain number of possibilities. So it's exactly your method, but maybe a little bit kind of a higher arithmetic version of looking at different possibilities.
I think the Chinese remainder theorem also sounds interesting.
Yes, and we will not talk about that
okay. But everybody goes Google it because it sounds really interesting.
Yes, Google away and you'll find all sorts of really cool things on what's called modular arithmetic and congruences.
Ooh.
That generalizes the notion of equality. So two numbers are congruent if they have the same remainder. when you divide by a certain number, which is a little bit looser than being equal, which means they're identical.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, I can go on and on and on about number theory, but I think our listeners have turned off and moved on to...
No, and I do want to get back to this interesting...
I'm sure you do.
...concept of not letting success define us, because you said something a little bit earlier in the discussion that I made note of. For when people start contemplating maybe working outside of their zone of success or accomplishment, sort of what can drive them to do that. And you said one of the things is if they're sort of losing steam in what they're doing right now.
Right.
And I think that's such an interesting concept, because I think there's a particularly sort of Western push to kind of work, work, work.
Yes.
And I'm not sure we always even realize we're losing steam, because students work hard, you know, for the most part in school. People work hard. Being busy is sort of like a bit of a status symbol. Oh, I'm so busy.
Right.
I'm rushing everywhere. I'm
busy. That's right.
That to even notice that we're losing steam takes, I think, a level of reflection that we're not always ready or willing to put in.
You know, this is really just an example of mindfulness, which is to really kind of come out of yourself and be in the moment and really assess, how am I at this moment? Not worrying about what's to come or fretting about what just happened, but saying right now. And for the most part, I think that most of us are good. You know, we're fine. But sometimes if you begin to really think about this in some depth, you might say, you know what? I wonder if I'm as happy as I was when I first started doing this thing. And the truth is, let's be honest, you do some – look, I've been in education for 38 years. Certainly my emotional biorhythm, if you will, over that career has to have ebbed and flowed, and there are high points and low points. And I think that all of us experience that, and we need to be cognizant of whether we're at a high point or real, you know, getting closer to a high point, or are we kind of on the downside of the slope. And if that's the case – are there actionable things that we can do? And it might just be changing our attitude. It might just be saying, you know what, I have to ignore that person. That person's driving me nuts. Or, you know what, I think that I can make this work better if I really just engage with this other person. And, you know, there are things that we can do within ourselves that doesn't require us, again, to necessarily switch our futures, that might actually allow us to be better at what we do and actually solicit more joy and satisfaction in doing it.
Well, Ed, thank you for helping us elicit joy and satisfaction. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can read more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.